Our next speaker is Leanna Durkin from University College Dublin, who will talk about slow time derivatives of Lorentz gauge metric perturbation.
Hey, thanks, Peter. Everything showing up there okay? Okay. Hey, thanks, Nils.
Yep.
Yeah, and thanks to the organizers for this opportunity as well. Very good afternoon from Dublin, everyone. I'm Leanne. I'll be talking about how we calculate the slow time derivatives of the Lorentz gauge metric perturbation that Adam and Niels have mentioned earlier. So first I'll explain why we're interested in this calculation and then also what are slow time derivatives. So we saw earlier, this is the flow chart of all things second order self-force. And as the label suggests, I will be talking about this green box here. So the reason we wish to calculate the derivative of our first order metric perturbation with respect to slow time t tilde is because of its contribution to the second order source, which we need, of course, for second order self-force calculations. So let me talk a little bit more about what this is and how it contributes to the source. We already saw a little bit of that in Adam's talk. So when modeling Emery's, we can consider the orbit to be slowly evolving. We say that the radius of our orbit is evolving with respect to slow time t tilde. And if our orbit is slowly evolving, then so too will be our metric perturbation. And the metric perturbation depends on this slow time through the orbital radius, which is the thing that is slowly evolving. And so by the chain rule, for circular orbits, at least, the slow time derivatives of the metric perturbation become derivatives with respect to the orbital radius R naught. Now, in slightly different notation than we just saw, the slow time evolution of our first order metric perturbation contributes to these two terms in the second order source. And I'll show some results later that include this contribution to the second order flux. Again, similar to what Niels just showed. So the next I'm gonna talk about how we calculate these slow time derivatives. So I'm gonna focus on circular orbits so we can turn our attention just to calculating the derivative with respect to R naught. The superscript L tells us that we're looking in the Lorentz gauge as this is where self-force calculations are well understood. And from some conversations with new friends yesterday in the student social night, I thought I should include what is our Lorentz gauge condition. So H bar is just our trace reversed metric, just to remind people of that. Okay, so let's go ahead and try and calculate this thing. We could try to find the R naught derivative of the metric perturbation by directly solving the Einstein field equations, but this is quite a challenging thing to do. So the calculation is greatly simplified if we use a gauge transformation, and I'll explain why that is shortly. But recall, a gauge transformation can be applied to our metric in this way. And one way we can obtain Lorentz gauge solutions, for example, is in terms of Reggie Wheeler gauge solutions plus some other gauge piece. So what this means is that in Bernstein and Barak-Sago's notation, we can write all 10 of our Lorentz gauge solutions in terms of a combination of Reggie Wheeler and Zaretti master functions and their derivatives. For example, H8, the H8 solution from the odd sector can be written in terms of a spin one and spin two Reggie Wheeler master functions that are sourced by odd perturbations. And we find that in other Lorentz gauge solutions, we get derivatives of these things as well. Should also mention that in the even sector, we get a contribution from this additional field called M2AF, which might be a bit unfamiliar to some. And this field just comes from the gauge part of our gauge transformation. And I'll talk a little bit more about this field and the equation that describes it later. So if we wish to calculate the slow time derivative of our Lorentz gauge metric perturbations, therefore, it's a lot easier to find the slow time derivatives of our Reggie Wheeler and Zirilli master functions, as well as this M2AF thing, and then perform a gauge transformation back to the Lorentz gauge. This is because the Reggie Wheeler master functions or the Reggie Wheeler equations are just much simpler than trying to solve 10 Lorentz gauge coupled Einstein field equations. So our calculation boils down to the simple task of getting the R0 derivatives of our psi's and M2AF, reducing a lot of the numerical terms. So now I'll talk about how we calculate these things and using the method of partial annihilators, starting with the Reggie Wheeler and Zirilli fields, which I'll just denote as psi from here on. Okay, so if we wish to find solutions to the R0 derivatives of our Reggie Wheeler master function, for example, start by reminding ourselves what is the Reggie Wheeler equation defined here, and our differential operator is given above, just to remind people of what it looks like. Because we're considering Emery's, the source for our first order metric perturbation is just that of a point-like particle, so it contains delta functions. We can say our source is compact. So we can go ahead and take the R0 derivative of both sides, do a bit of algebra, move the extra term that we get to the right-hand side, and we get a second order differential equation in our R0 derivative of psi with some kind of new source. I said that this source S contains delta functions. Now its derivative contains derivative of delta functions. This is still a compact term. But here, because psi is defined everywhere, our overall source is no longer compact, which is going to be a little bit tricky to deal with when we want to integrate over our source to solve this equation. So this is where the method of partial annihilators comes in. And we hit our equation again with our L operator, reducing our psi to S so that we get a compact source, but we now, as a compromise, have a fourth order differential equation. But we can solve this using method of variation of parameters and get our R0 derivatives solutions for the Reggie Wheeler and Zirilli functions. And of course, they will vary depending on our source and our potential. The method is largely the same. So that's how we do Reggie Wheeler and Zirilli. And now we want to find the R0 derivatives of M2AF as well. So as I said, I'd tell you about what is M2AF's equation. So that's this thing here. We have the spin weight zero Reggie Wheeler differential operator acting on the field M2AF, sourced by F times the spin weight zero Reggie Wheeler master function. So it's kind of similar to the spin zero Reggie Wheeler equation with a funny looking source. So if we want to go ahead and calculate the slow time derivatives of M2AF, we're going to follow an approach very similar to what I just outlined, but a little bit more involved. And we have to introduce these two new fields here. So we say that our R0 derivative of M2AF is the sum of M1 and M2. And when we go through the procedure of partial annihilators, we find we get two new equations that are sixth order differential equations with compact sources, which again, we solve using method of variation of parameters. And so these things have now been solved recently, and we can then use these in our gauge transformation to get our slow time derivatives of our Lorentz gauge metric perturbation, which we can then use to calculate our second order source and use in things like our second order flux calculations, which I'll show now. Thanks, Peter. So similar to the results that Niels was just showing us, this is the second order Newtonian normalized flux. And as we go along the x-axis here, we get closer to merger. The two lines that I want to draw your attention to here are the green empty circles and the red solid triangles. So the green empty circles line is the one without the slow time derivative contribution, and the red solid triangles contains the slow time derivative contribution. We see that there's not too much of a difference back here, but as we get closer to merger, the difference is more pronounced. And that's because our slow time derivative of our metric is proportional to this thing here, just as a reminder. So they are some of our recent results. Okay, then just to finish up, there's a few more things we can do. Everything I've done here so far has been in the Lorentz gauge, but ideally we'd like to move towards the Tucholsky formalism, which you'll hear a lot more about today. And I've also only looked at circular orbits, and I'm currently working on finding the slow time derivatives for eccentric orbits also. And this will be relevant for second order calculations. The main difference being that we go from derivatives with respect to R naught to derivatives with respect to eccentricity and semilattice rectum. And these derivatives will be relevant for near identity transforms as well, which you may have heard about earlier this week. So that's all from me. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We have some time for questions. Poshu.
So first of all, thanks for the talk. It was very interesting, Rian. I just wanted to ask, in the last graph you showed, do you think that if you included, for instance, more slow time derivatives, you know, by assuming they are not small, that you could like improve this graph and eventually get close to the transition to plunge?
I'm not sure what you mean by including more slow time derivatives.
Well, second, third.
Okay. Oh, right. I'm not sure. Maybe Niels or Adam would be better able to answer that. I'm not so familiar with exactly their form in the source. If higher derivatives appear,
they would all be formally higher order, but I think they would actually all diverge even more rapidly. You really, really need to take into account the fact that it's a totally different time scale coming into play. The epsilon to the 2/5 or whatever it is.
And maybe worth saying, we probably are in the transition to plunge in that rate. Regime. We're only 4 cycles from the peak of the waveform. So we haven't done it, but I guess the transition would attach smoothly.
Oh, yeah. I would be shocked if it didn't. Anyway, we should really, really hammer home that at 4 cycles before merger, we are 0.1% away from numerical relativity.
Peter, I think you're muted.
Sorry. Thomas, you had your hand up. There's about one more minute.
It's a semi-obscure question, I think. Leanne, going back to the beginning of the talk, you were talking about Bernstein's work where he could represent Lorentz gauge solutions in terms of Reggie Wheeler and Zirilli. Last I heard, one of the even parity solutions, he wasn't able to do that successfully. Or is this news, like you all have found that last piece?
No, that's exactly right, Thomas. That's where this M2AF comes in. For the even sector, we can get the Reggie Wheeler and Zirilli fields. Apologies if I didn't make that clear. But yeah, then we also have this kind of extra thing that means you're dead right, that you can't quite exactly get it just in terms of Reggie Wheeler and Cerruti. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. Could you use something like MST methods to get that M2AF similar to all the other Reggie Wheeler things?
Yeah, this is actually, I talked about that last year, I think, and we're still working on it, trying to get, obviously all of these things we can have MST for, but M2AF, if you stay tuned for Chris's talk later on, you might shed a little bit of light on that. Though I don't want to throw Chris under the bus right now. But yeah, we're still trying to maybe figure out if there's a way to get this in fully like nice MST Lorentz gauge as well.
Thanks.
Thanks.